Once again, the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Again, Ryan, what if you're not familiar with the Goal Line Club? What does the Goal Line Club even do?
Well, they are the official booster club for Golden Gopher football, and that's where becoming a member costs $100. I know it might seem like a lot to some people, but it's a 100% tax-deductible membership that directly supports Coach Fleck and this Gopher football program. Literally 100% of your money will go directly towards the Gopher football program, nowhere else, and it's tax-deductible, Luke. So if you want to learn more, go to goallineclub.org and become a member today.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to... We're all still drying out after watching that monsoon of a game yesterday in West Lafayette as the Gophers emerged with a 20-13 road victory in one of the wettest games I can ever remember Minnesota playing in. And joining us, as always, is second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman Derek Burns. Derek, I've seen some wet games in my time, but as the game went on yesterday, that thing got really turned into a soaker, especially in the fourth quarter. When you were a Gopher, did you guys ever play any real wet games?
Yep. We had one against Northwestern, of course. Wind and rain is typical down there. So we did have one game like that, and it's difficult, but I think, as you pointed out, Ryan, it by the end of the game is when things tend to really unravel because everything's wet. All the surfaces are wet. The players, the center quarterback exchange, everything just adds up. The playing surface gets worse as the game goes on. So it's not fun. It might look a little bit fun on TV at times, but you really got to concentrate and stay in there for the whole game and try to limit mistakes.
Well, regardless, we have to get this out of the way first. Everybody saw the cheerleader that belly flopped, right? Because we were all watching on television.
That
right?
was fantastic. Absolutely sensational.
Yeah, that right there. If you're at Purdue and you're listening to this and you're a student, that's wife material right there, everybody. Make sure you find out who she is. That was amazing. Okay, so let's get into the offense. The Gophers amassed 20 points, which I'm going to call a feat given the conditions yesterday. And they did it pretty evenly. They got 7 in the first, 3 in the second, 7 in the third, and 3 in the fourth. So they were able to score on every single quarter. And then just real quick, some other stats. Third down efficiency, they were 5 of 13. They didn't attempt a fourth down. They had 294 yards of total offense, 169 through the air, and 125 on the ground. And they actually lost time of possession, only 26 minutes and 38 seconds. Overall, though, this to me was a very good offensive output, Derek, and in large part because they were willing to take what the defense was giving them, and they ran with it.
Yeah, it was pretty evident early on that not only was Purdue going to use plus one in the box in those running situations, which we see time and again, but they were really downhill with their safeties on pretty much any running snap. So they were really going to challenge Minnesota to throw the ball. And we've asked for this, and I have to say, I have to be honest, the coaching staff didn't shy away. So they were able to, particularly in the first half, find ways to identify who, and sometimes more than one receiver would be in single coverage downfield, and they weren't afraid to throw it deep. So it was nice to see that from a coaching perspective, not being afraid to, as you said, take what the defense gives you. You want to execute better, of course, and we'll talk about that, as the game goes on and some things in the passing game that, I think could get better. But from a play calling perspective, that was definitely what Purdue gave them. And Minnesota was able to, do some things out of different formations to get that single coverage starting right away, of course, at the first touchdown, but then really throughout the game.
I think there has to be a big disclaimer with this offensive performance with the weather. Like, normally, I think you've heard me say for years, if you've listened a long time, I don't think the weather nearly impacts the game as much as some people think. But it was clear that because of the rain, did you guys see the field conditions there at Ross State Stadium?
So I actually tweeted during the game, I've watched a couple Purdue games this year. That is one of the nicest turfs you're going to see, like natural grass fields you're going to see in college football. And it just, it didn't break my heart, but it, man, I was like, oh man, they are just destroying that field. And it looked like, it literally looked like a fairway out there early in the year. And they just absolutely mucked it up, obviously.
Yeah. And that's where, it was raining to start. But like by the third and especially the fourth quarter, it was pouring. And it's just, I don't know how much of yesterday's. So again, 290 yards, 20 points, but I mean, they left some yards in the field there. I mean, Chris Ottman Bell specifically, I mean, Derek, we talked in the pre-production meeting, I gifted on Gopher Illustrated, but there was a third down drop that he had that I want you to detail, because I think you described it really well. It may seem to some people like just a nondescript, oh, you know, there it goes. But can you describe the play, what happened, and what could have been there?
Well, yeah, you're right. It did end up, I think, on the telecast just kind of being this nondescript incompletion just to drop ball. But as the game went on, you know, the Gophers took several deep shots down the field, but they did try, starting in about midway through the second quarter, to mix in more of that RPO and slant look. That they've been successful with in the past. And on that particular play, I thought really good play call. They faked an RPO slant on the play side. So Tanner essentially looked off the safety and then deliberately turned back and threw the backside slant to Ottman Bell. And they got exactly what they wanted out of the defense, because the backside safety bit and Ottman Bell gets behind the safety on his slant, and Tanner puts the ball right where it needs to be, and it ended up being dropped. But what I think was easy to miss is that if he catches the ball, it's only a, you know, 8 to 10 yard catch, but it's a touchdown because he's behind the safety. He has the speed to beat the frontside safety to the end zone. So they got what they needed, and it's just, you know, if he'd have caught that, and there were a couple more plays like that in the passing game, that I think he would have seen some more points on the board if they were able to execute on a few of those.
And that's where the day for Tanner Morgan looks nondescript. 9 of 18, 168 yards, a touchdown, no turnovers. But I think he had, I think off the top of my head here, at least three drops. So then you, instead of 9 of 18, you're 12 of 18. Your completion percentage is at 66. Like, he hits Brown Stevens in a deep shot down the field the first time in stride. The second one, I detail it on the GIF rewind, is, you know, he puts too much loft on the one to start the second half there to Brown Stevens, or else it's a touchdown. You'd like to see that improve. But there were just, with this offense yesterday, I mean, Luke, I guess you can speak to it before Derek can too, but it just felt at times yesterday disconjointed. I don't know if it was the play calling at times, because we saw the run-run pass, or especially in the second half, it just felt like it was either going to be a run or a deep shot, run or a deep shot. There just didn't really seem to be anything in between. But Luke, again, what did you notice? And then Derek, you want to take it from there?
Yeah, I want to highlight one thing that you kind of already mentioned here, is one, let's not overlook the fact that the Gophers didn't turn the football over given the conditions. You know, they won the turnover battle 2-0. That is really important when
that's a big reason why they won the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Those two turnovers were incredibly impactful. We'll get to the, you know, Boye Mafe strip sack we'll get to later, but Minnesota ends up scoring a touchdown, and then Tyler Newbin to end the game there. And it's a huge reason why Minnesota won yesterday, being +2.
Yeah, definitely. And part of it is, like, yes, they were disconjointed, but, you know, they weren't so disconjointed, you know, from a standpoint of like center quarterback exchange. I guess all of those are snaps anyway, but, you know, it's so easy to turn the ball over in those conditions. But what partially the disconjointed thing maybe doesn't bother me as it bothers the two of you, because it was obvious to me that they were basically giving them the option to throw it deep and saying, like, beat us there. And we were willing to take that and at least try that and force them to get out of it. Right. But then, being Minnesota, they are going to run into stacked boxes, and they continue to do that. You know, they do have to find a way to get some passing plays that are more intermediate, or, you know, connect on these RPOs. But Derek, I'm sure you can give a lot more detail on that. But generally, I wasn't as concerned given that they were just willing to take what the defense gave them.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing now, that let's start with the good, is that you did see them start to throw more out of the heavy packages and specifically go to some of that harder play action, which I think we've been calling for. And I think you'll see more of that as the season goes on. And I think that's just necessary. So not only are they identifying those single shots downfield and taking them when the defense gives it to them, but really, I think it's going to help the run game to lean more on that hard play action and take advantage of those safeties coming down to defend the run. So it was good to see that. But, you know, I would, when you evaluate offense, I tend to look at, in order to be really successful, you need to have big plays, but you also need to have consistency. If you're hitting on both, you can win with one or the other, but if you're hitting in both of those areas, that's usually when you're operating on all cylinders. And I think what we've seen is in the running game, there hasn't been as many big plays, a couple here and there, but there's been some consistency. But really in the passing game, they've been able to hit some big plays and really have had no consistency. That's just been my opinion. So I think, again, the play selection and play calling definitely got better on Saturday. But I just, the execution isn't there yet. I don't think it's clicking, and we're not seeing the consistency I think that we will need to see as the competition ramps up a bit here coming for the throughout the rest of the season. And go ahead, Luke.
Oh, I was just going to say, the only thing I want to add to that is that, you know, I agree with you, the consistency wasn't there, but I feel like they've been so stubborn in their play calling, with the exception of maybe the Ohio State game, that maybe I'm giving them a little bit of an asterisk with the weather here and giving them a pass. Maybe that's not fair, but that's where I'm maybe giving them a little bit of a pass there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the explosive plays thing is an interesting thing to dive into, where you look at Minnesota's three big passing plays yesterday. They were three catches for 137 yards. I mean, those three plays accounted for somewhere around 45% of Minnesota's total yardage on the day. But you look at what happened, you know, during or after those big plays, where, Minnesota finds Chris Ottman-Bell on the sidelines. Morgan makes a great throw. Ottman-Bell supposedly catches that. I think anybody who could see the replay saw that ball ended up between his legs. Should not have been a touchdown one bit. Big Ten officiating decided they're not going to review that one for some reason. But again, explosive play in the passing game, touchdown. You look at Michael Brown Stevens's. Again, the first one, it's a 51-yard completion there. Minnesota ends up getting points on that drive. So they have 10 points on two explosive plays. And then you look at to start the third quarter, Minnesota dials up that deep shot to Brown Stevens, and they end up scoring a couple plays later. So do I think it's a coincidence that you have three explosive plays through the passing game and they're on three different drives, yet Minnesota scores 17 of their 20 points on those three specific drives because they're able to generate an explosive passing play? I don't think it's a coincidence, but I think the point we're all trying to make here is it needs to become, you know, it can't be either big play or bust, big play or bust, big play or bust. You know, there has to be something resembling consistency here. Now, you also look at Dalen Wright wasn't there. He was did not travel. So his best friend growing up was the Utah player. I don't know if folks saw this. A Utah player was shot and killed last weekend. It was his best friend growing up. I mean, he brought him everywhere to every single camp trying to get that kid exposure. He ends up getting a Pac-12 offer from Utah, and then he shot and killed. So I believe Dalen Wright was at his funeral, so that's why he wasn't there. But again, you get a bye week now to get hopefully Ottman-Bell's ankle healthy. I think there's some speculation that Daniel Jackson might be a little banged up as well. But you can see they're at least trying, I think, is the point we're all trying to make, Derek.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one more thing to add that I think was a small contributor is the Gophers coaching staff and game plan was very conscientious about making sure they double teamed George Karlaftis on all passing downs. So they did dedicate a tight end or a running back on every single passing play to make sure that no matter where he lined up, that he was being double teamed. So yes, that does take another eligible receiver out of a passing pattern, which again, I don't think that was the number one factor, but that was a little bit of a contributing factor. But, you know, I just think I would just say that, you know, in general, I think the wide receiver position, which we've touched on in multiple games now, is not where they want it to be. I think it's coming along. You can see obviously some flashes and some big plays that we've talked about, but the crisp route running, the, you know, not having drops, making sure that all positions that are running routes are, you know, doing so on every single play, I think is not there yet. And so we might sound like we're being overly critical, but I think the point here is that we know that it will be needed going forward. Again, against that Big Ten competition through the rest of the season, there's going to come a time where other teams, much like Purdue on Saturday, are going to load the box. They're going to be run first on every snap and try and force Minnesota to beat them through the passing game. So that's where the development of things and the consistency and execution is critical.
All right, maybe just a couple more things real quick on the passing or just in offense in general that I want to touch on. Number one, the Wildcat with Cole Kramer. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't a Wildcat. I still think that's an encouraging adjustment that they've made. I think he's run it well. He runs really hard. I'm interested to see, and I can assume that they're going to roll in some pass plays out of this as well. But generally just kind of want to get your thoughts now, Derek, two games in on this.
Yeah. I gotta be careful what I Wildcat tends to be one of those strategies or, you know, like if it is a Wildcat, when it doesn't work, people just hate it. So I gotta be careful with my words here, but I really, you know, even going back to the Seth Green packages of the years past, I think we've been pretty fortunate as fans to have the success out of that package in being able to get on most of the time first downs when needed in those, you know, second, third, and short situations. You don't, as an offense, you really don't want to be in a position where you don't have a package or a look or a series of plays that doesn't give you that high percentage, because boy, then you're really having to go to more short passing, more, you know, things at a little bit higher risk. So I think overall it's been a big benefit to the Gophers, again, even going back to previous season. But speaking on Saturday, Cole Kramer, you know, this is, I think, the second game, and he looks really good, really natural. You know, if he bursts through on one of those last carries a little bit quicker, he's probably downfield another 10, 20 yards even, you know, on his most successful run from Saturday. So all in all, you know, it's a situation where, as everybody knows, I think by now, it gets you an extra blocker. So if the defense goes cover zero or cover one and puts an extra defender in the box, you can even things up with Wildcat by allowing your running back to become another blocker.
I mean, you mentioned that run, you know, Jerry, I'm sure you're listening, but if Co-Keefe just finishes his block and doesn't whiff there, I think it's a race to the front pylon for Cole Kramer on his third down first. So his third down run that got 12 yards. If Keefe makes that block, again, it's the backside safety versus Cole Kramer in the rain to the front pylon. But I am with the Wildcat with Cole. Again, I don't even feel really – I don't like calling it the Wildcat.
I agree with you.
Well, the broadcast kept calling it like the Crispy Kramer, which I was like, that's horrible. I hate everything resembling that. But we need to see them pass out of it eventually here, because it's there. I mean, whether that's going to be a one-on-one shot down the sideline or whether that's, I mean, I think we all would love and pray for play action to the tight end, because I'm sure to all hell it's going to be wide open. So it was just like the whole fourth quarter there, how, I mean, shocker, PJ Fleck goes to Fleck ball and becomes incredibly risk conservative and just like for eight consecutive plays just goes to the Cole Kramer package. But I mean, I would have loved to see at any point with like that 6 minute when Minnesota gets the ball back, I think with 6 minutes left and they're trying to salt the game away, I would have loved to have seen them try to do just one play action there where you tell Kramer, if the tight end's not there, just tuck it and run, you know. But it's so tough to kind of evaluate this offense because of the rain. But Derek, offensive line wise, I would tell you it was interesting. To the effect of Blaze Andrews' snap percentage compared to Curtis Dunlap's on Saturday was the biggest discrepancy of the season so far. Well, I mean, to me, that's not surprising because I don't think Curtis Dunlap has particularly played well at all. But what did you think about the effort that we saw from these guys up front coming off the Bowling Green game?
Yeah, so I think from a physicality standpoint, things were better. You know, it wasn't perfect. You did see a few of Tanner's throws and pass protection. Some guys leaked through on those stunts and twists that we've, you know, have given them fits. So they weren't perfect on those. From an effort standpoint, I thought things were good. It's tough to evaluate, and it's not tough, but I don't want to give them a pass, but it's difficult when your defending team is running with plus one in the box and the safeties are downhill. A lot of those, or at least several of those 3, 4, 5 yard runs, it's literally the free safety is making the tackle 5 yards downfield. So that, if that tells you how run first the defense is playing it. So I thought it was better, but it's from a consistency standpoint, as we've kind of harped on here, I still don't think it's where they want it to be. You know, what you want to do is really lean on those teams, and had the game script been different and the Gophers had had more plays run on offense, I think in that fourth quarter, you just started to see things open up a little bit. Maybe the defense wearing down a little bit. And that's the type of game that PJ Fleck and his offenses want to have, that you just keep going at them. And then things finally open up to a point where they, you know, now you're getting 7, 8 yard gains on first down versus your 3 and 4 yards. So overall for the offensive line, I would say it was better, but probably not everything they wanted to be. And just a note, you mentioned on Curtis, you know, I do think he's had his struggles. Where Curtis struggles is his footwork. He's got a block with his feet. He's a strong kid. And when he gets into somebody and can drive block him, he does really well. But handling those stunts and twists and getting up to a linebacker on the second level, he has a tendency to slow his feet down and lean on people. And that's where he gets in trouble. So I know they're working on this with him, and I know the coaching staff, I'm sure, has identified it. And it's something that from a technique standpoint, he's young, and you hope he develops and gets better as time goes on.
Okay. Last for me. And I don't know if you guys have other topics. I do want to make sure we sprinkle those in. This is a game where we see Co-Keefe and Brevin Span Ford amass 3 receptions on the game. This is an area I think they need to continue to lean on and game plan for, because I think both of these guys are worthy of targets. And obviously with Span Ford, you know, he's going to do something with it when he gets the ball in his hands. And with Co-Keefe, you know, maybe there isn't a lot of run after catch, but generally speaking, he has been sure-handed, which is fantastic. And these guys need to be rewarded, and it's there, right? They can play action into this without question. And I want to see them work in the tight ends more into this game plan going forward.
Well, we did see Span Ford have another catch called back.
Correct.
On a John Michael Schmitz hold that kind of set back the entire drive. But, I mean, it was... I'm glad. I mean, that it seemed to me like some of these looks that they had for these tight ends were actually schemed up. Like we saw 3 or 4, and I think those were the 3 or 4 targets that you saw from them. But Ian, I think you can use Keith in the passing game. You can use Span Ford in the passing game, especially now. Again, we'll talk about it at the end with, you know, Nebraska coming off probably their best performance of the year before. Now they get Michigan this weekend, but that Nebraska defense is going to be pretty good coming up when Minnesota gets off the bye there. So you're going to have to continue to sprinkle in these different concepts. And that's where my hope is for this offense during the bye week, when they do this self-scout, that they can try to figure out why some of the issues are what they are with how disconjointed it feels at times. Now, I'd also mention, I don't know if you guys know this, but I got a couple of texts from people after the game that they saw a starting running back, Trey Potts, leave on a stretcher into an ambulance. Now, I tell you, Fleck and the coordinators are not talking this week because it's a bye week. So I will be kind of figuring out what in the world happened to the starting running back that he had to at least go to an ambulance at some point after the game. But I think overall with the offense, it was better. There's still a lot of chances for them to get better. But again, they played the whole damn game in a monsoon. So it's like... What do you expect, you know?
And I would just add on offense, you know, in addition to seeing some of those targets of the tight ends, particularly in the flat, is going to help them, because it's going to force those defenses, particularly the outside linebackers and strong safety, to play, defend more of the field horizontally, which I think has been lacking a bit. But lastly, I think it was also good to put on film some of the deep shots to Michael Brown Stevens, I think will help them because the way Purdue played it is if they had on the front side split receiver, Chris Ottman Bell, if they were shaded inside, so, you know, pre-snap, they could see that there was no safety coverage on him. They tended to go to a back shoulder fade or a corner route or a go route to Chris. But as Purdue adjusted and went with an outside shade, so giving him safety help, that's when they went to Michael Brown Stevens on the backside slot post, you know, slot post or go route. And that's, you know, seeing that he has the speed to run that route and challenge, you know, and stretch the field a little bit on the backside, that I think is also a good thing to put on film. You know, him to come down with that, I think it's going to make defensive coordinators and defenses maybe think twice about not only biting so hard on the play action, but, well, we can't just bracket Chris Ottman Bell and just play with an outside shade and just leave the safety over him on every single play. Okay, if you're going to do that, then we'll have Michael Brown Stevens or Daniel Jackson or somebody on the backside run a post or a go route. So it's good to see them slowly getting a little bit more dynamic with some of these play calls and some of the ways that they're challenging defenses. I think it'll help them.
Yeah, and to Michael Brown Stevens, like, if you think back to the, even as much as we don't want to think back to the Bowling Green game, you know, they've basically taken that route concept. Now they're basically 66% success rate. Like, they got to continue going to that, and it's great that they have it on film. It's something that teams are going to have to honor. So, Ryan, any last comments?
Like I said, I mean, I just want to see where Minnesota can get to health-wise out of the bye, because Ottman Bell will get an extra week to get that ankle. I think Daniel Jackson's dealing with some things. He'll be able to get Dalen Wright back. We'll see what's going on with Trayson Potts offensively. But again, I feel like we always say it when the bye week comes, feels like a great time for this team to get healthy offensively. And I'm hoping that the self-scout that Sanford and the offensive staff do during the bye week here can help resolve some of the issues into the Nebraska game coming up in 2 weeks.
Derek, any parting thoughts here before we move on?
No, just blatant speculation. I have no inside information on Trey Potts at all, but just from experience, when I've seen that as a player, it's, well, usually, but I don't want people to think I have any sort of, I'm just guessing, that's usually to look for an internal injury. So internal bleeding, some kind of contusion, bruising of the liver, something like that. And you can get that from just something as simple as falling on the ball incorrectly, or you can get a cleat or a foot, you know, to your midsection. And if you are showing any signs of that, or the trainers detect that, you know, when they go through a screening during or after the game, they have to take you in because it's not something they can diagnose on the sideline. They need to get in and run some scans. So just, again, wildly guessing here, that could be perhaps what was, you know, happening there. So hope for the best.
Yeah, definitely. Again, you know, putting up 20 points in a borderline monsoon, I take it as a success. And obviously, seeing them improve on offense and in changing their best and taking what the defense gives them was very encouraging. Ryan, once again, the Goal Line Club has a $10 savings for those that are not members of the Goal Line Club. Again, to save the most money, you want to be a Goal Line Club member on these tailgates. But if they want to join us, maybe they're traveling in like some people did from California the other week and stopped by and said hello. But if they want to save $10, how are they going to do that, Ryan?
Well, they can just put in the promo code when they check out. Hoodie10. Yes, you're thinking as in like a hooded sweatshirt. Hoodie10, that's H-O-O-D-Y or H-O-O-D-I-E, and then the numbers 1 and 0 afterwards to save $10 at tailgate. Again, we're getting into mid-October here once this game comes around here, and we don't know what the weather will be. And if you know this one, it's guaranteed location-wise inside there at Williams Arena. Unlimited beverages, unlimited food. You get to meet some very, very fun to hang out with, to tailgate with, Gopher football fans, and that's where, again, ultimately, we'd love you all to become members of the Goal Line Club. Again, 100% of your money is tax deductible, and 100% of it directly supports Coach Fleck and the Gopher football program. But if you're not ready to do that and just want to come hang out with us at a tailgate, use the promo code HOODIE10 at checkout to save $10 to join us at the Nebraska tailgate on October the 16th.
All right, flipping to the other side of the football now, the Gophers only give up 13 points on the day. A really good showing by this group, and we'll obviously detail it in more, or put, get, go into more detail as we go on. So 448 yards of total offense. They were 7 of 18 on third down efficiency, 2 for 3 on fourth down efficiency. No surprise to anyone. 371 yards through the air and only 77 yards rushing. That's maybe a little bit misleading given some of the sacks. We'll probably get into that too. But generally speaking, I think the thing to keep an eye on is they were able to amass 85 plays in 33 minutes and 22 seconds of time of possession. This is very much a Jeff Brown offense, and the Gophers were able to hold them in check, forcing two turnovers. So maybe, Derek, just to start off, what was the Gophers' game plan going in now having seen this game against these Boilermakers?
Well, I think that we saw a return to Joe Rossi's strength in that the Gophers were mixing coverages and bringing some calculated pressure, particularly from the secondary at times, which I don't think we had seen as much of in previous games. So from a play calling standpoint, it was good to see that, because that's when I think the defense is playing their best. The other thing I would say, really, to me, the game plan was clear, and I think the coaches touched on this after the game, that they were not going to give up anything behind them. So their goal was to keep everything in front of them. They stayed light in the box, which is why I think Purdue was so committed to running the ball. They kept coming back to the run, and I think that was really trying to force Minnesota to bring things up closer in the box, which they refused to do. They relied on their front seven to stop the run. But then even in the passing game, you know, as a fan, I think it was frustrating at times to see Purdue complete a lot of those passes. But from a schematic standpoint, that was really that was a choice that Minnesota was made to give up a lot of those passes. So a lot of those routes in the flat, those 6, 8, 10 yard out routes in the flat, and then even some of those slants over the middle, those corners and safeties, you know, they're giving that up underneath. And I think the strategy worked for them, because although Purdue amassed a lot of yards, they didn't give up any long touchdowns. And then when it got to the red zone territory, you're able to tighten the screws a little bit in the secondary and hold them to field goals or field goal attempts as opposed to touchdowns.
I think the timely nature of this defense yesterday is what stands out to me. But I think first and foremost, 13 points on 85 plays against them is insane. Like, on a given week, like, Minnesota ran 52 offensive plays. Like, Minnesota's traditionally probably around that 55 to 60 mark. So Purdue running 85 plays and only having 13 points just speaks to how timely Minnesota was in spots where they get a key sack, I think, in the third quarter. I think it was Niles Pinckney who ended up getting it with Coney Durr to push Purdue out of field goal range. Or they get a key stop with Justin Wally rebounding and getting a third down stop. Purdue misses a field goal. I mean, there were just a lot of moments in that game where Purdue would, like, between the 20s, would be moving the ball, but then Minnesota gets into the red zone and they get near the 30, and this defense really comes to play. And that's where it's just a multitude of different guys. I mean, Jack Gibbons, with Mariano Sori-Marin going out early in that game, played 85 of 85 snaps. I mean, again, that's an extra 20-something snaps that you're not used to, because, again, you're only in a normal game playing or somewhere around 60 snaps. And I think Gibbons was everywhere. I mean, he had 3 deflected passes, led the team in tackles. And that's where I'll be honest, boys. I was watching that game and I'm thinking to myself, Minnesota's got 8 passes broken up, and they didn't get an interception on any of the deflections. Where if this was Iowa, they would have had 8 interceptions on 8 deflections, because that's the way it's going for Iowa football. And again, we'll get to them at the end. But, I mean, there were hands in the passing. I think Justin Wally and Terrell Smith played better than what PFF graded them. I don't think PFF was very kind to them at all. But, I mean, it's not like the Gopher cornerbacks, Derek, were in poor position. I think the Purdue quarterback made some throws.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm excited about Wally, because, yes, you know, I think he got mixed up on the touchdown that he gave up. It looked like technique-wise he was playing that like he had safety help when clearly he didn't. That or his eyes got way too far into the backfield too soon. But, I mean, he had 2 pass breakups on third down in the fourth quarter on David Bell, who is going to be a top 100 NFL pick. And that is a true freshman guarding him. that were key plays in the game. I mean, what did you think about Minnesota secondary against a very good, probably the second best receiving core they're probably going to go against all year?
I agree with you 100% on the corner, on evaluating the cornerbacks. You could watch the game and be frustrated by why aren't they coming in harder on the slant and trying to break up those passes. Well, to me, it was very clear from a coaching standpoint that that was not their strategy, because what you open yourself up to is if you're going to tighten down on the slants and try to break up the pass, you're opening yourself up to the sluggo route. So all they have to do is fake the slant and take it upfield, and now you're either one-on-one with the safety or it's wide open. So that was something they did not want to put themselves in a position. So they gave up some of those slants. I mean, a couple of those Terrell Smith slants where it's caught, it's a good throw and a catch, and he's right there. I mean, the catch is made and it's tackled, and he's probably graded a minus, to your point, Ryan, on the pass grading. But I just don't think that was his deliberate approach on those particular routes. The other thing which you touched on that I would also agree with is we tend to, as fans, when we watch a defense, we tend to think that every good play is a breakdown in defense. And I think it's fair to point out that not only does Purdue have really good receivers, I thought they had really good play out of the quarterback position for the most part on Saturday. Yes, there were some tip balls that ended up with an interception. I think that's going to happen when you throw the ball that many times. But really sharp, I thought, reads pre and post snap, being that Minnesota was mixing up the coverages. I thought it was really sharp reads out of the quarterback position. Didn't always hit the spots, but really good reads. And then, as you pointed out, the wide receiver position, some really good catches. You know, sometimes those plays against you are just the result of good play on the offense. And, you know, at least two or three, if not half a dozen of those catches, you almost couldn't defend it any better. And they came up with a really good play. And that's in the Big Ten, that's going to happen from time to time.
I would also add that, you know, Jeff Brom's really good, right? Like he finds a way to scheme.
He's a very good offensive mind. There's a reason he's now a head coach in the Big Ten.
Yeah, for sure. Like he's just really good, and he finds a way to get, you know, balls into players' hands, and that's awesome for them. And he's got some talent too. I guess the thing that maybe I wanted to get to as well was I was really surprised at how many times Purdue ran the ball. They ran it 34 times again on 85 total plays, but I was really, really surprised that they ran it that much. Ryan, you and I going into the prediction were like, well, one, we didn't know King Doru was going to play, but two, it was like, you know, they're not going to run the ball at all. They're going to throw it like, you know, 90% of the time. And I was really surprised how they committed to the run.
Well, to Derek's point, I think Minnesota was daring them to run. And that's where King Doru is 21 carries for 95 yards. It's, I would say, an unproductive 95 yards. There weren't really too many explosive plays on them. But, I mean, I think that was Rossi's game plan, was they were going to try to take away the pass as best they could with, you know, David Bell, and that number zero was a good player as well. But I mean, I guess I give credit to Purdue there, where they were, you know, with King Doru back, who missed the game last week, they committed to him and he ran 4.5 yards per clip. Mm-hmm. But in that same respect, I mean, I think we're actually starting to see what the upside is here with the D line. And that's where, I mean, and we can get to next here, you know, Jaquandus Burns, Derek's, and Mines, now fourth cousin, who got some action along with Donald Willis filling in. But I'm excited about this D-line because I think they figured it out now. This is three straight games where I think the defensive line has really brought it. I mean, I watched Boye Mafe's strip sack, and I don't know. Like, I think back to Carter Coughlin, guys, and how – when you think of Carter Coughlin as a gopher, you think of like 100% effort and just relentlessness. And what I'm trying to make the point of is Boye Mafe just makes it look just effortless. I mean, it looks so easy for him. You watch that strip sack and he just swipes the hands down, is able to adjust his route, has perfect technique in terms of gets his right hand right on the ball, strip sack, Minnesota gets it. Mafe's now at 5 sacks through 5 games. I think he was credited with 4 hurries on the day. I think number 99, D'Angelo Carter, is really starting to come into his own.
Trill Carter.
Yeah, it's weird now that Trill has gone mainstream because he's been called that behind the scenes for years. But, like, I'm watching the game on BTN, and they're like players to watch, and it says Trill Carter. And I'm like, holy cow, Trill has made it. The name has actually stuck. But like, you watch the Jaquanis Burns sack that was in the third quarter there. D'Angelo Carter absolutely blows up that play, and he would have been there in a quarter second if Jaquanis doesn't get there on the delayed blitz. You saw Trill Carter come up with a big third down stop along with Boye Mafe in the run game. I mean, even Niles Pinckney, Derek. I mean, you're starting to see the Clemson transfer start to make more plays, and that's where, again, you look at the upcoming games on the schedule against some offenses that I don't know. I mean, we'll find out how good they are, but I think this is a top five D-line in the Big Ten the way they're playing right now, and I think there's some pretty damn good defensive lines out there in the Big Ten. But what did you think about the defensive line's performance against Purdue?
Yeah, I think that those guys, you know, they're still operating on a heavy rotation, and I think those guys are really competing with each other. I mean, they're challenging each other. You saw that Thomas Rush popped up a couple games ago, and now Boye Mafe is, you know, he's been consistent in the last few games, and it's they seem to be playing with, you know, I'm not going to bore everybody with the progression from learning what your assignment is to the technique to effort, but they seem to be on that phase three where they're confident with their assignment. They understand the technique, and they're just able to play fast and play instinctual. So they're not just doing what their assignment is on the play and filling a gap. They're actually going out and taking that next step and being able to make some plays. Something exciting to look forward to, I just wanted to touch on regarding the defensive line that I don't think we've fully seen, is the Gophers started dialing up a little bit more pressure in this game, but they left cushion coverage behind it. So what I mean by that is if they brought a safety blitz, which they did several times, or a corner crash, they left cushion coverage behind it because they didn't want to give up something over the top. So as you would expect, the quarterback ended up just throwing right behind the blitz, you know, into a short route. If the Gophers want to, and what I would look for, you know, in some of these games coming up, if they continue to bring some calculated pressure now and then, but they run press coverage behind it, you're going to end up with more sacks because it's going to take away that quick release that the quarterback can just throw behind the blitz and hit a guy, hit a check down, or hit a hot route right behind it. When you take that away, now he's got to hold the ball longer, which is going to give more time for the rush to get home. So all in all, I would just, you know, end with where we started with this group, which is they were really left out there to defend the run on their own and then come up with a pass rush for the most part on their own because the Gophers didn't want to load the box and they stayed in cushion coverage. So really, I think a really solid game from the front seven.
All right, Luke, before I ask you about the linebackers, do you care to revise anything about your Joe Rossi statements yet?
No, I don't. I like.
What is it going to take for you?
I told you I'm going to wait for the end of the season. I don't think that.
Holy hell! How much of a like? Oh, Luke.
Whatever. That's fine. You can.
Was your take even that you? I don't even remember at this point because I just like to badger you about it.
You like to badger me
about it. Was it just that you don't think he's good or what?
No, my biggest issue has been recruiting, and that is looking very poor because they've been able to identify some guys, and I wanted to see him. I wanted to see him put out the same output defensively with people that were not, you know, Jerry Kill, Tracy Clay's recruits, which last year that looked real skeptical, right? This year it's looking a lot better. They identified weaknesses, and to their credit, they found ways to patch those weaknesses by bringing in a Jack Gibbons, bringing in some guys on the defensive line, a place that they were light, and then getting a guy in like Justin Wally, who looks like an absolute stud in the making, right? And then, you know what? I wasn't buying the Tyler Newbin and basically I didn't buy the safety excuse, you know, that they had switched positions, but I think I got to eat on that one. They've looked really good in the secondary. I was going to turn around, Ryan, though, and ask you guys a question. I asked this previously, and I feel like this is a lot harder question to answer now, where before I think it was pretty easy and there was maybe like one guy we could identify. But the question was, as we go into this bye, when you look at this defense, you know, who's someone that you can lean on to be playmakers? And before, I think we all concluded it was basically Tyler Newbin, in which he made a big play yesterday. But I feel like there's a lot of guys now, you know, through the five games who could be playmakers on this defense. So I'm curious to get your guys' input on that.
Derek, go for it.
Well, I don't want to take every there's to your point. There's a number of guys that I would say we probably talked about him a couple times, but you know, Wally, I think, is emerging as a guy who, you know, if put in, you know, the right position and is able to be challenged, he can respond. Ryan talked about it. He gets caught peeking in the backfield on the touchdown, which as the outside split receiver, there's no reason you need to look into the backfield. So that's a freshman mistake, but you can see he comes back. And after giving up a couple of those slant routes, which again, I think he's coached to stay behind it. You see later in the game, he gets an excellent position and gets inside one of those and ends up with a pass breakup. And, you know, this guy's just learning to play at this level and he's already showing some flashes. So I think he's a guy that, you know, he's maybe reached 25% of his potential. So some exciting things to come in terms of making plays, I think, out of him.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Wally. I was texting with a prominent defensive staff member yesterday, and I know, oh, good for me. But, you know, we were texting after the game, and I was like, you know, Wally's going to be really good. And, you know, this defensive staff member texted me back, he is resilient, and this kid's going to be a star. And I think if he continues to figure it out, I mean, as we see him even throughout the progression of the game yesterday, and this kid really knows how to play the ball well. He knows how to position himself well between the receiver, and he knows how to make a play on the ball. And that's where David Bell on that second one had to break up that one, or else I think Wally comes down with an interception there. And, I mean, Luke, on the D-line, I think that was our biggest question was, you know, through the first two games, Boye Mafe hadn't shown up. Thomas Rush hadn't made a progression, and the defensive tackles were struggling. Well, now that we're five games into it, going into a bye, I mean, I feel good about Thomas Rush. I feel good about Boye Mafe. You see D'Angelo Carter coming off his strongest back-to-back game performances of his career. I think Niles Pinckney starting to become more comfortable there as well. We continue to see flashes from Asezio Tomiwu. I mean, Jack Gibbons continues to get his hands in the passing game. You know, Tyler Newbin with his second game-ending interception. We can get to that play here in a second, which I think Newbin played that incredibly well. When you get to see it on the All 22, and I'll have Derek break that down. But I think Minnesota's also been a little unlucky in the turnover aspect because, again, it seems like every time Iowa deflects a ball right now, it's an interception. Where I think the last 2 weeks, Minnesota's gotten 14 pass breakups, and I'm not sure that one of those deflections has really resulted in an interception yet. Now, again, some of it's about defensive positionings, and I truly do believe some of it is luck. Like Jack Gibbons gets his hand on one yesterday. Where, you know, Justin Wally is just a half second late diving for the interception, or Jack Gibbons gets his hand on one where if it wasn't a monsoon, maybe it sticks to the gloves he's wearing and he's able to get an interception. So I think the opportunities for even more plays to be made, Luke, are there, but I think you're starting to see this defense, you know, I think Joe Rossi's defense right now, Luke, really understands their roles well. Like, and they're playing to their strengths. And I think that gives me a lot of optimism that they can get even better coming out of the bye. But, Derek, on that final game-ending interception, you know, I watched that back, and they actually showed a great replay of it where it's kind of just you can see the entire field, and you see Newbin kind of almost bait the quarterback into that throw. So when you watch back that game-ending interception for Tyler Newbin, what stood out to you?
Well, it was kind of symbolic of the Gophers' defensive performance on the day in that had that throw happened in the middle of the field or even on Purdue's side of the 50-yard line, it would have been caught because I really believe that the Newbin as a safety would have stayed, kept that in front of him, probably given up the catch. It was just a full zone, you know, in the middle of the field, they just played a stick zone defense. And on the outside, the corner just maintained outside leverage. But the fact that it was getting down into the Gophers territory, you're able to dial up your aggressiveness because the field is shorter. So to your point, Ryan, you know, Newbin, I think, sees it immediately, but doesn't show his cards, doesn't tip his hand, stays back and waits for the quarterback to make that same throw he had made several times in the game previously. And then said, okay, I got you. I'm not staying back on this one. I'm not putting everything in front of me. You know, the goal line's now, you know, within reach here at my back, I'm just going to step in front of it. So good instincts. And as we talked about on some previous pods this year, being that the Gophers are leaning heavy on that zone defense in the secondary and getting guys to move around, that's what I think the next level can look like is guys on the back end being able to start taking some calculated risks now and then and stepping in front of some passes and getting more turnovers.
I just want to add, one of the things that's common for a Purdue offense or a Purdue-like offense, you know, where they're going to spread and throw you, throw a ton and, you know, kind of get you wide and stuff. As the field becomes compressed, Derek, we've talked about this a number of times, it can be hard to score. So you have to be a bend and not break defense. What continues to boggle my mind with Purdue in general is, you know, their inability to run the ball with effectiveness inside the red zone, because the teams that are really good, if they can't get the explosive play touchdowns, they have to be efficient running the ball inside the 20s because the field gets compressed, much like we saw that Tyler Newbin touchdown. So generally speaking, this is more for my entertainment than maybe the listeners care, but why is it the case that these teams that do spread you out struggle so much other than the field being compressed? Are they just so used to spreading out and they can't rep it? Or what is that challenge for them?
Because the defense is able to use the safeties and run support a lot quicker as you come into the red zone. So that basically that second and third level can tighten down and come. It's if you don't run with a power, you know, extra blocker, just an inertia type run game, and you really rely on just spreading things out and making sure that guys are back in their hook zones and sitting in a zone and putting guys in space, well, there's less space. So the safeties are able to come down and play the run harder, which I think is where Purdue struggles. Now, my mind is always going to, as you know, putting your head in the mind of an offensive coordinator. Well, what's the counter to that? Well, I think you need to use your bubble screens and your lateral passing more effectively when you get into the red zone, which I think Purdue did to a degree because Minnesota was giving that up. But again, Minnesota chose to defend the middle of the field, particularly against the run with the front seven throughout the whole field and rely on those secondary players to keep everything in front of them. So what we saw is that, you know, when things tighten down and the field gets shorter, those safeties come up, you're able to react quicker on the run and shut a lot of those things down because you don't have as much space.
I'll give you guys some parting comments before we wrap up defense here. Anything you guys want to add before we wrap it up?
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit of linebacker outside of Jack Gibbons because Mariano goes down early in that game.
Yeah, what is the injury there? I had the sound off
a
lot.
I heard he tweaked an ankle. So okay. It sounds like he had a little ankle tweak in practice this week.
Got it.
Played through it and then tweaked it again. And then they were like, well, I mean, the training staff didn't clear him to go back in the game. So then we saw what I think was maybe the most surprising thing was it wasn't Braylon Oliver necessarily getting more snaps or James Gordon with Cody Lindenberg. I do think he's going to probably be out for the season. Sounds like he had surgery this past week. He was in a scooter at the game. Sucks for him. But it was Jaquandus Burns, the former Ole Miss commit that Minnesota got in the 2020 class before signing day, the IMG Academy grad. And then it was also Donald Willis. Both of them playing the most amount of snaps I've ever seen them play. I don't think they were necessarily playing at the level that Mariano was coming into that game. But, Derek, I mean, that was really your first extended look at number 20, Donald Willis, and then number 15, Jaquandus Burns. From what you saw from the two guys who really stepped in to replace Mariano, what did you think?
Well, I think with the younger guys in general, and even including Wally and some other of the defensive players that are, you know, getting some of their first action, you can see that the athleticism and playing in space is there. You know, with young players from time to time, you worry about them maintaining gap integrity, knowing their assignment, not biting on things like play action and misdirection and things like that. But, you know, the athleticism is athleticism. Guys are going to get bigger and stronger and their bodies will fill out, but you can tell it's encouraging, I guess is what I'm trying to say with these younger guys, that they're able to play really well in space. Sometimes you have guys at the linebacker position or even the D line position that are really more cut out for that, you know, that 9-on-7, that, you know, socking it in there against a two tight end or two running back look and you know, playing against a power running team, but they kind of struggle when they have to defend sideline to sideline. So I think what jumped out to me with the younger guys is didn't see any obvious missed assignments or biting on, you know, misdirection, and, you know, a couple of the angles on the edge, you know, they could clean up. And, but other than that, it's good to see that the athleticism is there, because, you know, these guys are going to get stronger and their bodies will get bigger, particularly with Jaquandus Burns, who looks like he has a lot of length and has a good stride to him when he puts some lean mass on and then learns the game more and can, you know, be more and more dynamic in the play calling. It's going to be fun to watch.
Regardless of who made that sack, I know it was Jaquandus Burns. It was just encouraging to see a linebacker come in on a blitz like that and finish the play. That to me was the most encouraging thing, because time and time again, we've seen Braylon Oliver come in and struggle to break down and make that tackle. And, you know, it may be a little bit easier play because he wasn't, you know, in space one-on-one with the quarterback, you know, as the pocket was collapsing. But generally, that was encouraging for me to see, Ryan.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where, I mean, I was just encouraged that, you know, I don't think they played the level that Mariano had been, but it was really their first extended looks at both of them as full-time players and not just package-specific players. I mean, that's the first time we've ever seen really Jaquandus Burns out there.
Right.
And we saw him for now, again, Purdue did some things with the play action with the tight ends that they got open against those two guys, which, again, Jeff Brohm is a very good offensive coach, and he knows who's in the game and who's not and who to exploit. But that's where you got to see some of the younger guys behind, you know, what's it going to look like when Jack Gibbons isn't here next year?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe Donald Willis and Jaquandus Burns are able to factor in there. So I think overall, you know, defensively for this game, Luke, I'm just encouraged by the bend don't break nature and the timely plays when they had them. Because again, 85 offensive plays against you and there's only 13 points on the board.
I was going to say, not only is it 85 plays, but you got more than doubled up on first downs, right? And usually if you're losing in first downs, because the Gophers had 12 and Purdue had 28, you had to have some explosive plays. The Gophers had some, but they didn't result in touchdowns per se. But yeah, generally, I mean, that's the thing, the bend not break and, you know, limit the points, given all the statistics they were able to amass, really impressive by this defense.
Yeah. And I think there's still room for them to get better. You know, as the defensive line, specifically the defensive tackles, I mean, if Minnesota can get interior pressure, like consistently on some of these passing downs to pair with what Boye Mafe and Thomas Rush are doing, that's going to allow Joe Rossi to be even more creative in the back end to try and generate opportunities. So it is, again, I think defensively, this is where this team is going to be for the next seven games. For the last seven regular season games here, it's going to come down to, you know, what the defense is going to give you. They have a high floor, but I still think they have a high ceiling there. And that's where, if they continue to get more from the passing game on offense, there's no reason why Minnesota can't get right back in the West, considering how really bad it is outside of Iowa, Luke.
Once again, it's time for Gopher Math, and our partner at Ayers Rock Planning, Brandon, put together some stats for us. Ryan, did you know that this is the first time that Minnesota has amassed four straight wins against Purdue, and they did it from 2018 to 2021?
I mean, I bet you Brandon's right. It sounds right.
And so when you look back, he actually calculated four game winning streaks in four straight years. And the last team that Minnesota did this against was Wisconsin between 1984 and 1987. And why is that important? Well, these are stats that would be very good for our podcast, Ryan. But what he's going to do, he's going to put even more effort in for those that are looking for ways to save money on their taxes. So if they are interested in learning more about how Ayers Rock Planning can put a specialized plan together for them, go to ayersrockplanning.com or maybe just tweet him at Ayers Rock Plans, and maybe he slide into his DMs and he'll get you hooked up with ways that you can save money. Because one thing that you can save money on is your taxes, Ryan.
Absolutely. I feel like I say it every week, but I'm 100% serious. I like my money. I want to keep my money, and I don't want the man, aka the government, to take all of my money. And that's where having a qualified tax professional help you develop an individualized and personalized plan to save you the most amount of money possible that stays in your wallet is incredibly important. And that's where, if you want to learn more and talk to Brandon about how you can make sure you're getting the most bang for your buck and saving the most in your taxes, go to AyersRockPlanning.com, Luke.
All right. So if you want to enter again, Gopher Math, the hashtag, tweet AyersRockPlan and Gopher Radio as well as Ryan Burns. Here is your question. David Bell's receiving yards divided by Purdue's drive started inside their own 10-yard line minus Gopher sack yards. Again, PEMDAS does not apply, so take the first divided by the second, subtract the third, get your answer, go to Twitter, punch it in. Hopefully you win 2 months of free GI.
Well, and I don't want to make the disclaimer that David Bell receiving yards is just for this specific pass game against Minnesota. But as Luke said, 2 free months of GI on the line. Now we're getting into December, which is recruiting time. Never been a better time to join, Luke.
All right, we have to talk some special teams in this game. This had to be, in my opinion, their best special teams game, maybe in the PJ Fleck era. I'm just excited that Ryan can't complain because I can't literally think of one thing that he can complain about today. So maybe let's start, Derek, with you. We talk a lot about how special teams is going to either be a benefit and maybe a difference in the game, or, you know, they're not going to really do anything or they're going to hurt you. So what did we see in this game?
Well, I'll start with the low-hanging fruit, and that was the game that the Gophers got out of their punting unit was incredible. I mean, maybe the best punting game in PJ Fleck's tenure, certainly Mark Crawford's best punting game, was able to put the ball over the returner's head several times, pinned him back deep at least once or twice, and then was very close to pinning him back. One other ended up scooting into the end zone. If the coverage was downfield a little bit more, you could have pinned him inside the five again. So hard to do it any better on the punt coverage team. So it was really nice, particularly given the conditions. You know, with a game like that, you look for, you know, a punter to drop a ball or have one go over his head or even lose his plant footing, you know, and fall over trying to punt the ball, given how wet the field was. So not only did they not have any mistakes in that area, but by far Mark Crawford's best game, and I think maybe even the Gophers' best game punting the ball in PJ Fleck's time.
Well, not only was, by the way, Luke, I don't know that, I'm trying to think if I can find something wrong with special teams. I don't want to try and rack.
I really don't think you can. Okay, here, I'll give you one. The one where they could have easily gotten another alignment penalty on a field goal that was ultimately missed.
Oh my God. It's a great point. I mean, so I'm going to describe the play as it's the 36-yard field goal that Purdue's lining up for in the fourth quarter, and Derek LeCaptain. So I don't know if they would have been called or not. It would have been borderline. I think it would have been very close because it would have been shoulder on shoulder with the long snapper and the defensive tackle. But LeCaptain runs over to the defensive tackle, yanks him 4 feet to the left.
Yeah.
And then the guy misses the field goal. But again, it doesn't matter because LeCaptain, a.k.a. Mr. I'm on scholarship now, special teams player for Minnesota. I mean, that play right there alone is worth the scholarship.
Yeah, let me add one more thing on that play. I thought that they could have called a jumping over the line on that, but they didn't. I think I texted you guys the same, and I didn't notice it on the watchback, so I might have been wrong, but I thought they're possibly going to have two penalties there. Thankfully not, because he misses the field goal, which obviously gives the Gophers the 7-point differential. But special teams-wise, one thing I think we have to get you to touch on, Ryan, was how good Mark Crawford was in the punting game, but also how good he was in holding for field goals.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, as good as he was as a punter, and again, I can get into it here in a second. Derek already hemmed and hawed, but I mean, some of the holds he was able to, like on that final field goal attempt, they zoomed in perfectly. I mean, that ball is sopping. It is, I can only imagine, just a wet brick coming right at Mark Crawford. He uses those strong rugby hands of his, and he's able to get, now he gets the ball down. The laces aren't perfect, but he gets the ball down and Trickett is able to nail it. But the biggest thing with Mark Crawford was, I mean, you look at his day overall. I mean, he had finally, I mean, that I'm so just at loss for words because Minnesota had a punter do so many things well, but 6 punts on the day, a 51-yard average. but four of those with a 51 yard average were inside the 20. I believe three of them were inside the 15. And you look at his two fourth quarter punts specifically, because you'll remember Minnesota got backed up in the right in their own end there to start the fourth quarter. And Mark Crawford with a 60 yard bomb that is flipping the field that Purdue's got to start at their own 22. And then you also have Minnesota doesn't get it on third and three. I think Dunlap gets blown up. Mark Crawford with a 45 yarder that pins them at the two. So not only did he get it done throughout the day, he got it done when it mattered most, where he's able to have a 60 yarder to flip the field. And he's able to then also pin them inside the two on his next punt. So, I mean, Mark Crawford, I mean, I would love to know what changed for him in terms of why was the ball in a monsoon exploding off his foot when we haven't seen that through the first 11 games of his career. I have no idea what changed. I'd love to know if it's a technique thing. Minnesota maybe just trusting their coverage unit more, saying that they believe that Bishop McDonald or Justin Wally, who are whoever the gunner is out there, can get down and make a play in space and make the open field tackle. I have no idea, but Mark Crawford, I mean, arguably was the MVP yesterday for the way he was able to flip the field and able to pin them so deep inside the 20. I also think that Matthew Trickett, I mean, you look at the kicker battle, Purdue misses theirs in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. Minnesota doesn't. Again, you can make the argument it doesn't matter anyway, Ryan. Purdue still needed a touchdown, but I think just mentally,
yeah,
knowing that, you know, if we give up a touchdown, they still got to make the extra point to force overtime versus if they get the touchdown, they got the lead. I remember that was a big talking point at some point during the fourth quarter. But, I mean, Trickett was nails, made every extra point, made two big field goals of 38 and 42 yards in a driving rain. That's, again, part of the big reason, Luke, why they won the game was in a tight, contested Big Ten game. It's going to come down to turnovers, which Minnesota was plus two on the day, and then what special teams didn't shoot themselves in the foot more. And Minnesota's was actually an asset for them yesterday.
Yeah, and I think, again, one thing that we maybe gloss over too often is kickoff. And it's the name is it Kesich? I don't remember.
Dragan Kesich.
Yeah, Dragan Kesich. Like, he's been really good. Again, no return yardage in this game. That's another thing, another game where, you know, your footing can be bad. Both he and Trickett were great. And again, a little bit easier when it's a turf field in terms of footing. But again, in grass, really, really impressive game from the special teams in general. And I just want to make sure that we give I'm going to blank on his name. Number two for the Gophers, used to play wide receiver.
Philip Howard.
Yeah, great, great play by him to get that ball downed at the 2 yard line.
He has been really good in pairing with Mark Crawford because his primary responsibility on these punts inside the 10 is he's running to like the goal line or the 1 yard line and turning around and finding the ball and trying to play the ball to get it down. And I think Philip Howard has done a tremendous job with that. Certainly.
Yeah. All in all, a great outing from the special teams. Derek, you got anything, any parting thoughts?
Yeah, I was just going to give a quick shout out to Brock Anikstad, being the weather conditions, what they were on punt return. There's nothing wrong with letting a punt bounce in front of you and then picking it up if the bounce is right, picking it up off the bounce and covering it and stopping the ball from getting pinned inside the 10-yard line, which he did a couple times. We've been critical of lining up the returner deep and on the one play having Trey Potts try and run up and catch something, and because he's too deep, it ends up being muffed. But with the weather conditions being what they were on Saturday, I could understand them trying to be safe with the punt return. And it was nice to see some of those that dropped in front of Brock that he didn't let them bounce, because inevitably they would have rolled down inside the five or even, 10 or even the 5 yard line. So, little things like that, get you another perhaps 10 to 15 yards of field position. So it was good to see him be mistake-free in that area and make the right play.
Yeah, again, another very encouraging outing, more encouraging outings from special teams this year than any I can remember in recent years. So hopefully they can carry this past the bye.
Isn't it weird how they're like, hey, it's just, they're incredibly fine, to like good, or they're just dreadful.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, it's going to be a battle in the Nebraska game, you know, of incompetent special teams, probably two of the more incompetent special teams in recent memory in the Big Ten between Nebraska and Minnesota. So that should be pretty interesting to watch. And once again, we got to get a word in from our favorite insurance agent and one of our longest tenured partners, the Burns Insurance Agency. And Ryan, you know this agency quite well, don't you?
I do. He is my insurance agent. And that's where the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father and gigantic Gopher fan Bill Burns, believes in service, service, service. Now, if you don't believe it for yourself, I can be a firsthand witness. Him and I went up to Deer River, Minnesota this past week. We're out in a fishing boat on Big Winnie trying to catch some walleye and perch. And he's getting calls during the day from his clients. And again, he's answering the phone while out in the middle of a big lake. And he's putting these claims to work saying, hey, there's one person who got in a car crash. Am I covered? He walked them through step by step again while out and made sure that they felt comfortable with what was going on. He's calling the adjuster. He's doing everything he can to make sure that you are getting your needs provided for first. And that's where his goal is. It's not to be the biggest insurance agency in the state of Minnesota, but to be the best possible agency that is able to put your needs first and providing you with the service that you deserve. Now, many Gopher fans have contacted him and experienced that exemplary service that they absolutely deserve. And that's where he is, a local independent insurance agent located in downtown Oakdale, Minnesota. So great savings, great coverages, and above all else, great service are forever going to be the keys to his game. So if you want an agent that you know if something happens, a pipe bursts in your place of business, you get into a car accident, something happens with your home, you want to make sure that that important call to your insurance agent is answered immediately and he can help walk you through the steps of what's going to happen right away. So if you want to learn more, go to insurancebyburns.com, go through their website, or just shoot them an email at bill@insurancebyburns.com for a free quote today.
All right, and to close out, let's take a quick look around the Big Ten and some of the games here. The first one to touch base on, we can go over really quickly, I think, was the Friday night game between Maryland and Iowa. It became an absolute blowout where Iowa scored 31 points in the second quarter to win 51-14. Gruesome injury also for Dante Dimas, a huge loss for Maryland in general, but this was not what I expected. And once again, Iowa found a way to bench another quarterback.
Well, it's just like, I mean, I think Luke, you and I were watching that game, Derek, I don't know if you watched it, but like Maryland's in it. Iowa takes, I think it was a 10-7 lead. And then their best player in Dante Dimas, like eviscerates both of his knees on a kickoff return, fumbles the ball as well. Iowa gets the ball within the 15, scores. And then I swear to God, every time Iowa touches the ball in their back seven, it just ends up in somebody's hands. It's incredible. I just, like, Iowa's a good team. But do I think there should be a college football playoff contender? Probably not, but it won't really matter because the rest of the, like, they have their game of the season this upcoming week.
Yes.
When they host Penn State. And Luke, I don't know if you've seen the line. Do you know what the line is that was first released?
No, I haven't seen it released. Is it released yet?
Yes. What do you think it is?
I would say Iowa 3.
No.
It's really? Pick 'em.
Again, I think Penn State's a pretty damn good team. But it's already been bet up now, too. I'm seeing Iowa -1.5, Iowa -2.5. But my question with Iowa is this, Derek. What happens when they don't get 9 turnovers every damn game? Like, so I think some listeners, especially maybe a host of another podcast, would say, well, Ryan, they're just going to get 3 or 4 turnovers every game. That's what Iowa does. Iowa, you know, it's just like, what happens when Iowa only forces, say, 1 turnover? You know, what if it happens this week? Is their offense good enough with Spencer Petras and Tyler Goodson and the I think their passing game weapons are fine. You know, Arlen Bruce has certainly come on here in recent weeks, but I'm just like with Iowa. I don't know how much to, and that's where like I've seen some respected college writers that I follow be like, you know, Iowa's defense is literally, you know, very good, but it's just also like every time they deflect a pass, it's intercepted. And that's where, to Luke's point, I think they have gotten every single quarterback outside of, I think, Iowa State's benched because of the amount of turnovers that they have. And it's just like, you know, I continue to say it now through five games, and we're almost halfway through the season already. And so I might look like an idiot. I mean, I already certainly do with that under Iowa 8.5 take, but I'm just like, the way they're doing it just doesn't seem unsustainable to me, Derek.
Yeah, it's interesting because you know that some of those turnovers are a result of the talent they have, particularly in the back end. But yes, there is some good fortune that they've been able to take advantage of. You know, I did have a chance to watch part of that game on Friday, and I was a little bit surprised. Maryland early on in the game put some things on tape. You know, they were able to get some chunk plays on the Iowa defense by pressing those safeties back and then throwing some things over the middle of the field. But you know, with the turnovers just piling up, they put themselves in a game script to where, you know, Iowa didn't, you know, the game just quickly got out of reach, and rightfully so, Iowa took advantage of it. So I know what you're saying, Ryan, which is what is an Iowa score? Well, for example, this game against Penn State on Saturday, what does the score look like if the take give is even? You know, I think that's what people are questioning. And you're right. Maybe Iowa fans are going to say, well, that's not going to happen. We're just going to be plus two or more in the take it of every single game. Maybe they just believe that's the way they're playing. And maybe that's what happens on Saturday. But, you know, I think if you're going to, you know, try and find a weakness or poke holes a little bit, I think that the quarterback position for Iowa, you know, is they're not probably getting everything that they'd like to get out of there. And of course, Iowa fans are quick to respond and say, well, I think their quarterback's 11-2 or something like that, have won 11 straight games. Yes, that's true, and maybe he's doing enough. But if you start talking about things like playoff contender or, you know, being a playoff team, you're going to have to be pretty solid in all phases, and you know, that'll be something to look at. Last thing I wanted to say about Iowa, Ryan, is if you had people upset with you for the Gophers fair catching kickoffs against Ohio State, I think you can be prepared that the Gophers are going to fair catch kickoffs against Iowa, because their kick coverage unit is incredible. They were not only on that fumble, but their coverage units are down to the 10 or 5 yard line on the returner on kickoffs. So I would fully expect Minnesota to be fair catching those kickoffs. I'd be surprised if they don't.
Yeah, and they have arguably the best punter in the country, right? Like, their special teams are legit.
They are, and that's where, again, you could say, you know, Iowa's defense is just always going to force turnovers. I mean, yes, but you're not going to be able to just – what happens if it's one or two? Because then it's going to be a closer game. But, again, you look at this Maryland game specifically. I mentioned it's 10-7. Iowa just took the lead. Maryland's absolutely in this. And their best player just gets – a gruesome injury. Iowa gets gifted field position because of it. It's 17-7. Then Mike Loxley, who I don't think is a good coach, just implodes. You know, Talia Tungavaiola implodes. But I think for, you know, as much talk about Iowa, like, what in the Christ is happening with Wisconsin, fellas?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I can tell you, but like, Graham Mertz, I mean, you sent me something, Luke. I think what did you send me about Graham Mertz's like QBR or something?
Oh,
like that?
Yeah.
Is that you who sent that to me?
Yeah, this is from Barstool somewhere. Let me see if I can find that tweet. I'll go to it. But in this game, maybe chat real quick about how, man,
sure,
just how they absolutely got destroyed.
Well, it's because like Wisconsin's recipe for victory forever is they have a great running back and an outstanding, phenomenal offensive line. Well, here we are. They're 1-3 so far. They're 0-2. And now, again, all three losses to ranked opponents. And I think Wisconsin is now something absurd, like 0-8 in their last ranked games. But you look at the rushing effort for them, 32 carries for 43 yards. Like, and their offensive line was consistently getting blown away. Now, Aiden Hutchinson is really, really good for Michigan. I think that Michigan front seven is a good team. I mean, I think Michigan now is a top 10 team in the country, but it's like, 38 points against this Wisconsin defense, and then 42 the week before. Now, again, there's some pick sixes in there that shouldn't count against that defense, but it's like this offense is like one of the worst in the country, Luke, and it starts with Graham Mertz, and I know he made a throw to end the first half, and then he ends up getting knocked out of the game and taken to the hospital, but he has been bad. But that whole offense has been bad. There's not really one thing you can point to offensively for them, whether it's the quarterback, the running back, the offensive line. I mean, they've all been bad. And so it's like, Wisconsin, what's going on?
Yeah, so the stat that I sent you is from Bet Stats, which is somehow related to Barstool. It was a tweet that had been sent to me. And there have been 2,170 qualified collegiate seasons for ESPN's QBR, okay? Currently, in 2021, Graham Mertz ranks 2,128th out of 2,170. Like, yikes. That ain't great, Bob.
Effing yikes. And, Derek, I feel bad for Jim Leonard's defense because I feel like they're getting already worn down and they're only 4 weeks into the year because the offense is just 3 and out, 4 and out, no sustained drives, and you're having to play. Again, I mean, you look at the rushing stats on the day for Michigan, nothing to write home about, but it was the big plays in the passing game that just did them in at the end. And that's where, I mean, what's your take on Wisconsin right now?
I think that as bad as the quarterback play has been, and they've needed it at key situations and not only not gotten it, but have had turnovers out of that position. I really believe the difference has to be that the offensive line. Wisconsin has really feasted on positive game script situations. The reason they've been so difficult to beat, in my opinion, for the last 20 years is that they've consistently gotten better on defense, but they're able to play even or get a lead and then can just lean on you in the run game. They get enough out of their pass game, but they don't need that much out of their pass game. Well, in a game like Saturday, they're not getting, as you gave it with the stats, Ryan, they're not getting much of anything out of their run game, so they can't control the game script. So when they get behind by one or two scores, they don't have the right scheme or the right talent in place to play from behind. That's just not what they've done. And to their credit, they've controlled the narrative on so many of these games, and they're just not. You know, I think that's been the big difference. They're not being able to control the line of scrimmage on offense. They don't have the first-round draft pick or second-round draft pick running back on the roster. So they just can't, although their defense is really, really good, they just can't stay with those one- and two-score leads and just lean on you and control the game.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it's a really good point, Derek, because you look at the game against Michigan, and we got to give Michigan credit. I think Michigan's much improved too. But they go into halftime up. Michigan's up 13-10. Wisconsin scores that touchdown late, right? They more or less get blitzed in the second half, but more importantly, they get blitzed in the fourth quarter, giving up 18 points. Then you look conversely back at that Notre Dame game. Again, you know, it's somewhat close, 10-3 at the half, and then they ultimately get it tied 10-10 in the third quarter against Notre Dame, and then give up 31 in the fourth quarter. I do think that, you know, one, they wear out, and two, you know, the turnovers have absolutely killed them from Graham Mertz.
And that's where the game plan forever, why the recipe for success for Wisconsin for the last decade has been an outstanding defense that's buoyed by an outstanding rushing attack, whether that's NFL caliber running backs, you know, a plethora of NFL offensive line talent. And that's where I can't explain, you know, I can explain the running back thing. I don't think that Wisconsin is recruited well there. And I think you're seeing that, but the offensive line thing doesn't make sense to me because Wisconsin has recruited well there. And I think they returned some starters coming into the year, but it's just like, they have been bad. And you know, as bad as they've been, Graham Mertz has been even worse. And that's where, you know, the funniest part is you look at their game coming up this weekend, Luke. So they play Illinois on the road this weekend. Take a guess what the line in that game is. And Illinois is a horrible football team.
I have no clue what the line is, but I would imagine that Wisconsin by 7.
It's Wisconsin by 8.
Wow.
Like, And it's an over under of 41. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. But again, the recipe for Wisconsin for so long has been a game manager quarterback that makes enough plays that is just NFL running back, NFL offensive line, and a great defense. Well, I think Jim Leonard's got a good defense to great defense, but the offense has just been so putrid that they can't get any help.
So Ryan, that really surprises me that they haven't recruited well at the running back position. Is that because they've missed on some recruits, or should I say they haven't gotten the guys they've targeted, or have they gotten the recruits they've wanted and they just haven't panned out?
They just haven't panned out. And that's the thing. Like, they got a 4-star running back from New Jersey in Jalen Berger. He has not done anything in his career. You know, Braylon Allen was a 4-star type of kid. I mean, he's only a true freshman. We'll see what he is. But, like, again, they had those two running backs dismissed earlier in the year. Ches Malusi hasn't really been much for them. But, again, I think it's also that offensive line not helping them out too much. You know, I think teams are just stacking the box. And then, you know, traditionally, you know, whether it was Jonathan Taylor, Melvin Gordon, you know, pick your Wisconsin running back from the 2010 era. Mm-hmm. Like, they were able to run through contact, and they had such a good offensive line that they were able to just make chunk plays. But with the struggling offensive line aspect and certainly the struggling quarterback position, I mean, it is the development from the running back position and the offensive line position is, for me, the story for them. Now, Wisconsin, the next few weeks, boys, I mean, it certainly lightens up. I mean, they had three ranked games to start the year with Penn State, Notre Dame, and Michigan. Now, it's interesting because two of the three were at home, and the other one was essentially a home-ish type of game at
Neutral
Soldier
site,
Field.
Yeah.
I mean, Madison to Chicago isn't that far, but, like, you look at the next three games for them, at Illinois versus Army, at Purdue. Like, will they get back on track offensively? Will they go 3-0 in those three games? You'd imagine so. But it's like, I think Iowa is performing right now what everybody thought Wisconsin was going to do. And that's where Wisconsin now just looks like what I thought Iowa was going to do this year. And that's why I took the under on them at 8.5. So it is a perplexing place to be in the West, and maybe no more perplexing team, Luke, outside of Wisconsin potentially, is what happened between Northwestern and Nebraska, a 56-7 win.
Did you hear the quote from Frost following the game?
No.
He goes, nope. That's what happens when things click.
Scott Frost is smug ass. Get to a bowl game, Scott, and then we can talk. But it's just like Northwestern is dreadful.
Yes.
Now, Nebraska, I also think, played incredibly well at home, which, by the way, you want to guess, you two, what the Michigan-Nebraska line is? Now, Nebraska is at home for it's going to be a night game for Nebraska next week.
Oh,
undefeated Michigan coming into town to face a 3-2 Nebraska team.
This is a really good, so far, this is a good Michigan team. And Cade McNamara came out and had a pretty good game against Wisconsin, which is arguably one of the better defenses in the country. I'll let you guess first, Eric.
I would say Michigan by a touchdown, Michigan -7.
I was going to say a touchdown or a field goal. I'll take -5 for Michigan.
What I'm seeing on Circus Sports, it's Michigan -2.
No way. Really?
I get that Scott Frost's team just played their best game of the year.
Yeah.
Most complete overall. I mean, they ran for 400 yards on Northwestern. I also think Northwestern is a horrible team this year. Again, I think they're a 2019 Northwestern team that went 3-9, and that may be being generous for them. But, like, Michigan's just a different beast. I don't know, Derek, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, I had a chance to watch the Northwestern Nebraska game, and I probably, to a fault, I tend to look at matchups and probably put too much weight into that. In other words, what's each team's strength and weakness, and look at, try and take that into the matchup. And I thought from the beginning of the year that Northwestern, their big weakness is team speed. They look really slow. And so you take that versus Nebraska, that runs a very wide open, particularly in their running game, with the option looks they give, where they really try and spread you out and use their speed. it was just a, to me, it was a complete mismatch. I'm not trying to take everything away from Nebraska because, like you've said, Ryan, I think their defense has improved a lot, and I think they're just getting better each week as a team. So I don't want to take everything away from them, but I think it was just a terrible matchup where, so in other words, what I would say is going into like the Michigan game, I think it's going to, I don't think it's going to be as it's not going to be a bad matchup for Michigan because Michigan has a, enough team speed. So, I would probably take the, Michigan minus two if I were going to put money on it, just because I think it's going to be, they're going to be able to match Nebraska's team speed. And you never know, they've been so bad in the special teams area, that could be the difference as well.
But honestly, 427 yards of total rushing and then 230 yards throwing the ball, like, whew, that is some offense, ladies and gentlemen.
I feel like 56-7 doesn't even like describe how dominant Nebraska was in that game. I mean, they were tremendous. I mean, I look at some of the other games across the Big Ten from yesterday. You got Illinois pulling it out against a Charlotte team at home. You have Michigan State beating Western Kentucky. And then you obviously have Ohio State absolutely destroying Rutgers. And that's where, go ahead, Derek.
I wondered if it was going to click for Ohio State. They've had their struggles and, you know, the quarterback position and, you know, they were in a position where I think everybody was saying, okay, Ohio State's not Ohio State this year. It's going to be Penn State. But I think people forget how much talent from every position, from the kicker, punter, the long snapper. I mean, you know, on how much talent Ohio State's stacks, that I really kind of wondered if they wouldn't, you know, and time will tell, but if they wouldn't get things figured out. I know Rutgers is, you know, they're certainly not the doormat they've been. And you would expect Ohio State to. Yeah. Yeah. So, I guess what I'm saying is I wouldn't be shocked if things now start, you know, rolling for Ohio State.
Yeah, Stroud on the day, you know, who had been injured, 17 of 23 for 330 yards and 5 touchdowns. Like, he absolutely balled out. And again, I know that Ryan has a man crush on Travion Henderson, 8 carries, 71 yards and a touchdown. And I think this Rutgers defense is pretty decent. I think that Ohio State woke up just a tiny bit in this game. I think you're absolutely correct, Derek.
Well, you look at like the East overall now. I mean, we've kind of touched on, you know, the games for this upcoming week. I think there's, let's see, 4 teams on bye, including Minnesota. And that's where the 2 games of the week are essentially going to be: Penn State, Iowa at 3 o'clock on Fox, and then Michigan traveling down to Nebraska. And again, I hope that Nebraska Michigan game goes 9 overtimes and Nebraska is just tired and beat up as hell coming into that Minnesota game the next week. But the Big Ten East now, I think, has 4 teams in the top 10 with the rankings coming out today. I think you have Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, and Ohio State. And it's just like, good googly moogly. You know, when we start to get into the thick of it here, the East is going to be real, real good. And that's where with the West, it's just like, and that's why I think Minnesota's still got a chance here to go 4-0 in their next 4 games, because you get a bye week to prepare for Nebraska. Something that Scott Frost has struggled against PJ Fleck, and Minnesota gets a bye week to prepare for them while Michigan comes to town, and it's going to be a very physical game down there in Lincoln. Then you get Maryland at home, and we've seen it's either incredibly hot or incredibly cold for what Maryland's going to be able to look like, and Minnesota gets them at home. You get to travel to Evanston to take on what is a bad Northwestern team, and then you get Illinois at home to start November before you have to travel to Kinnick, and that's where I mean, I look at Minnesota overall, and I think we said this even last week. I feel like we've said it every week kind of looking forward, but now especially into the bye. If the passing game for Minnesota can just figure it out enough and you don't have, like, some of these explosive plays that, you know, if Chris Ottman-Bell just catches a slant, he houses it, and this is a different game. You know, Cole Kramer, if he gets a – you know, gets one more block, he houses it. I mean, I think they're close to more explosive plays, but if the passing game for Minnesota can just complement the run game, like, Minnesota has a has a decent sized chance here, is still going 4-0 in their next four games. And then it sets up an awfully interesting game once again down there in Iowa. But I mean, when, now that Minnesota's going into the bye week, and Derek, I think we'll start with you. I mean, that's my biggest thing that I want to see find some resolution, is have the offensive staff figure out some solutions for what's ailing this passing game. Because if they do, Minnesota can still have a pretty dang good year. I mean, if you were Minnesota staff now going into the bye week, what are some of the things that you're trying to find solutions to?
Well, okay. So I had thought about this before we started recording too. If we kind of seemed like we were in agreement that the execution in the passing game is what's been lacking. We've used, terms like maybe discombobulated, just not clicking, things like that. So as a coach, if that's your evaluation and those guys are spending how many hours a day looking at film and trying to evaluate things, if that's your conclusion, I think you have to go back to base fundamentals. You have to, I don't want to use the word simplify because I don't want people to think that that means the game plan gets simplified. But I think in practice on down, you need to go back to simplifying things like, let's go back to our core routes in the passing game, our core checks and reads, and work on that and get better with that. You can build, these are 18 to 22 year old Division I Power 5 football kids. You can add the in wrinkles and add in, some gadget plays and some layers. They can handle that. But as a player, just as a side note, as a player, I always hated to hear that too, because it's not fun to go back to base fundamentals and go back to the boring drills and the boring reps that, you want to move on to something more fun. You want to get into more 7-on-7 and different scrimmaging and stuff like that. But that's what I would be focused on, is just back to, we kind of, I don't think this is a perfect analogy, but the three of us talked the 2018 when things were going really haywire with the defense. I don't think that's where the offense is, but if you just bear with me, that's what we talked about there, was just go back to fundamental football, be gap sound, be good with your reads, and slow things down a little bit, and then you'll be able to play fast, go back. So I would say to try and apply the same thing to the passing game. Let's go back to being sound with our routes, our reads, from the quarterback position, from the wide receiver position. Let's start there. Let's develop some bread and butter in the passing game. I'm glad that they're throwing the ball downfield, but try and develop some bread and butter, and I think the rest will come.
Okay. Just some thoughts here, kind of looking at the schedule, coming out of the bye, you have Nebraska, Maryland, Northwestern, Illinois, right? And this was kind of the section of the schedule starting with Purdue that we said, this is going to kind of set up November and tell you what does this team have in general, and what are they made up of? And so they tripped up a little again, or not a little bit, they tripped up a lot against Bowling Green, something we didn't anticipate. But generally speaking, I think Nebraska is much better than we thought they were going to be. I know that their record is 3-3 at this juncture, but I think they're a lot better than they look. They just find ways to, not get it out of their own way. But generally, I think the stretch of Nebraska and Maryland is going to be tougher than we thought. I still think Maryland is much improved. I think Northwestern and basically football in the state of Illinois with Northwestern and Illinois is not great. So I think if you can find a way to get through these two games, win them, it's going to put you in a good position. But the thing at the end of the day for this team, time and time and time again, is going to be consistency and playing, not to your opponent's level or, up and down to it, is, play your game, focus on you, and just execute. Because at this point, that is the main place that they've struggled, Ryan.
I don't know that I really have anything more to add to that. And that's where, I think to your point, the next two games, I think, are going to dictate the next two games, because the next two games on paper, the nice thing is you get them both at home. But I think the quality of what we thought the opponent was coming into, like to start the season, I mean, Nebraska looks like a pretty dang good team. Now, Northwestern also looks a lot worse, whereas Maryland looks better. But I also think Illinois may be a little bit worse than we even thought. But again, It's a pivotal 2 weeks here. Is I bet you Minnesota's probably a slight favorite in both of their next upcoming home games. But if you're going to have a shot here to potentially take a swing at the king that is Ferentz here in 4 or 5 weeks, you need to get it done coming out of the bye, Derek.
Yeah, I think that just the last thing to add, I know we've talked a lot about offense, but you know, everything seems to have come hard with the offense, even running the ball, as much as this, the identity this team wants to have is just a run right at you, control the line of scrimmage, control the game clock, the time of possession. A lot of the yards have come hard. And if you think about that, you know, in depth a little bit, I really think it gets back to just a lack of passing threat. You know, when in 2019, that middle streak of games leading up to the Penn State game, Minnesota, I think, had established enough of a passing threat. And yes, we can talk about the difference of having a couple NFL wide receivers on the roster. And there's certainly a little bit of a difference there, but I think the recipe is still there to that. They developed a passing threat to where defenses had to say, okay, we don't want to get beat by the RPO slant. We do not want to get beat by the deep crossing routes. We've got a scheme for that, which I really think opened up the running game. I mean, that streak of games in the middle of 2019 against Illinois, Nebraska and another, I mean, Minnesota just ran over them. And I think part of it was, yes, they were executing well. They had talent at the running back position, but it was the threat of the pass that I think opened things up. So I think that, you know, in order to be more, if they can be more balanced and pose more of a threat, which I'm encouraged by some of the things they put on tape against Purdue, I think that's also going to help them in the run game.
All right. So just to wrap here, want to thank everybody for listening. Want to thank our sponsors, Ayers Rock Planning, Insurance by Burns, and the Goal Line Club. Again, want to thank all of you for listening. We have a fun.
Hey, Lou.
Yeah.
Are we going to have an episode coming up here during the bye week?
Yeah, we are going to have an episode. I thought we would just like kind of sneakily drop this, but do you want to talk about this now?
I'll just say this. We're going to have a very special guest that many Gopher football fans know on to kind of preview some things upcoming with the Nebraska week, talk about some charity type of events, and kind of get an update on what I'd say a recently famous Gopher has got going on in his life. So we'll be able to drop that during the bye.
All right. Yeah. Again, everyone, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.